This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. Strap yourselves in. You're probably stuck in traffic on your way to IKEA. I am going to bring you so much joy in this next hour. It is ridiculous because we are talking about, well, one of my favourite things. It's not wine and it's not food. We're actually taking a little journey with some coffee. Stick with me. Indeed, we are talking cravings because it is Saturday at 1 o'clock. Hello, I'm Pete Dillon with you again. For those who had the joy of my dulcet tones on Saturday Magazine for 2 hours, you've got me for another hour. So do strap yourselves in. Today we are taking a step away from food and from wine and all other intoxicating liquors to another intoxicating liquor that without which I probably wouldn't survive. When Maslow created his hierarchy of needs, two things he omitted. One was wine, the other was coffee. So in the studio, I have two wonderful guests. Ben Bicknell is here from Five Senses. We're going to talk with Ben through the growing, roasting, purchasing, blah, blah, blah part of coffee. It's far more interesting than that sounds. Also with us is the man who is responsible for my caffeination every Saturday so that I can survive through a couple of hours of radio. James is here from Mr. Close from just across the road here in the city. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm pleased you could be here because I know you've had to reshuffle your roster to do this. And shortly we'll have on the phone Craig Dixon, who is the president of the Australasian Specialist Coffee Association. What do they do? We shall find out indeed. Let's start with you, James. You pump out how many coffees a week?
Oh, we would Monday to Friday, we're about 400 to 500 coffees a day. So 2,500 between Monday and Friday. And then we're a bit slower on Saturdays. We're sort of the opposite to many of the inner urban cafes. We slow down a little bit more on Saturdays.
Unless, of course, there's football on.
That's right. We sell lots of mugs of Chino then. And so we probably do about 200, 250 on a Saturday.
Okay. That's a lot of coffee beans.
It's a hard-working machine. Mm. Yeah, it really is. Really is.
Ben, does that term mugs of Chino make you feel sick?
It does cause a little involuntary eye twitch every now and then, but I can get through it.
Well, I don't. What is a mug of Chino is the first concern for me.
I think this is kind of one of the interesting things about some of the coffees that are kind of arriving and being offered in cafes around kind of Melbourne is that there are lots of different interpretations and lots of different recipes out there. So.
And I think we have those big, ugly, nasty chains to blame for this. I think coffee should be made by specialist, independent outlets.
Couldn't agree with you more. Look, I use that term with a bit of affection. It was, I think, I'd never really heard of it until about 6 months ago during school holidays, and I had two people come and say, could we just get two cups of Chino, please? Oh, what the hell, we're on holidays. Let's have two mugs of Chino.
It sounds like something out of Kath and Kim.
Yeah.
So that you'd buy at the Fountain Lakes shopping centre or something.
So, no, we don't actually sell mugs of Chino. We do sell large latte, cappuccinos. But
I think coffee in, like, large coffee, what I order every week, is a good thing because it's the small is just not enough. It's just not enough. And it's remarkable how a simple extraction of some beans can cause us to become so rapturous. I don't know why it is. Ben, perhaps you can explain it. Why is coffee so, A, so good for us, and B, so bloody addictive?
I think it's a really kind of exciting combination of things. You know, obviously there's the caffeine that's in there, which is a great component of it. But
which is classed in some parts of the world as a drug.
Yes, definitely. And there's some coffees that have more and some that have less. So we kind of tend to have coffees in Australia that have a little less caffeine in them than other parts of the world. But I think the culture and the ritual around it is one of the really engaging and attracting things as well, that you get to go in for your regular Saturday coffee and there's a level of comfort and expectation and then you get something that's been crafted and is really satisfying each time you have it. I think they all kind of play in together. You know, when people say their favourite coffee is the one that they had in the plaza in Rome while they were on holidays, relaxed, you know, it might not have been the best tasting coffee in the world, but it was the best coffee.
But that's something that evokes a memory, and therefore that's why it's so good. James, you came from not from a background of hospitality or coffee. How has owning a business like Mr. Close changed your life?
I don't actually have a life anymore. But,
well, that's how it's been changed.
Welcome to hospitality.
Yeah, look, I worked in really marketing for 20 years, and my last role was with a corporate health company. So I actually spent 4 years making the world fit. Now I spend all my time feeding people,
Which is making the world happy rather
exactly,
than feeding.
Making them happy. And I've always wanted to do it, and I think a cafe, anyone who owns a cafe, should do it through pure love, because you don't really do it.
You don't do it for money.
That much money. It's a lot of work, but I adore it. I think it's changed my life, because I'm now not talking to a computer every day. I'm just talking to people, and I'm pleasing people. And I think, Mr. Close, we say the one thing that drives us is we just want to make people happy. And that's why we do what we do, including giving good coffee, the balance of coffee.
I want to come back and see how your knowledge of coffee has changed, but I'd like to hear from you first. 0427JOY949, send an SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au. 1300JOY949, speak to Heath out on the desk, doing a remarkable job. Or you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. We're going to have a couple of messages, a little bit of music, and come back with Craig Dixon joining us on the phone to talk us through what the Australasian Specialist Coffee Association actually is. It's 13 minutes past one.
Joy 94.9.
Yes, of course it does. And this is Cravings, one of those fantastic shows taking you through until 2 o'clock, when the fabulous fellows from Fender Benders will come in and talk to you about cars. They're very knowledgeable, those young men. Thanks to Greg and to Mark, the team from Detours. A very interesting and relevant topic, all about horses, on today's program. I'm joined in the studio by James from Mr. Close, who is the man who left the sanity of corporate marketing to open a hospitality business. He hasn't gone grey yet, so he's not working hard enough. Also in the studio is Ben Bicknell from Five Senses. Ben, I want to come back to you in a minute and talk about some of the broad discussions. I've got a message here. One of you may be able to assist. I recently completed a barista course for a change of career, and I think the history of coffee is fascinating. Love the advice about what it is like to own a cafe. Thanks, guys. Great topic. That's from Steve the Truckee. So thank you, Steve. Joining us on the phone is the president of the Australasian Specialist Coffee Association. He's also the general manager of a coffee roasting company. His name is Craig Dixon. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello there.
Now, I've dragged you away from a bar or something, haven't I?
Yes, well, it's my mother-in-law's 70th birthday, so I'm happy to have a bit of a break, to be honest.
Yeah, it's always good to get away from the mother-in-law, birthday or not. Craig, I wanted to bring you into this discussion. First of all, what is the Australasian Specialist Coffee Association?
Well, I suppose we're an association that represents the specialty coffee industry in Australia. The question becomes then, I suppose, what is specialty coffee?
Thank you very much. You preempted my next one.
And Ben can probably assist with answering this question. So I suppose there's a basic fundamental that is the quality of the green bean and all the specialty coffee roasters buy. So when green bean is purchased, it is graded using a particular method that we all use internationally, and it's given a score. So specialty coffee is generally something that represents a score of scoring over 85.
So we're not talking Makona here, are we?
We're certainly not talking Makona, no.
Because people think coffee can be instant, and I am inclined somewhat to disagree. If you have to put a teaspoon of something into a cup to make yourself a hot beverage, don't use coffee.
Yeah, that's right. That's not not the best way to have a cup of coffee, that's for sure.
No, and these two gentlemen in the studio are laughing because they know that I'm right. You own a roasting company.
Yes.
Talk me through what that is.
Veneziano Coffee Roasters is, a roasting company that's basically based initially in Melbourne. We also have a roastery in Brisbane now, and we also have offices in Canberra and Sydney and Adelaide. We source coffee from around the world, all specialty grade coffee. We roast and sell to cafes and restaurants and offer quite a lot of training and support behind that. I suppose the whole question of what is specialty coffee, without going too crazy, to us in Australia, it's a lot more than just the green beans that you buy. You know, it's about having the right equipment and the right training and the right processes behind to make sure that, you know, ultimately the customer gets the best experience possible, which is a fantastic cup of coffee. So in Australia, specialty coffee is more than just buying the right green beans.
Now I'm going to bring the other two folks into this discussion. What constitutes the perfect cup of coffee? I'm going to start with you, James, because you obviously had one day a coffee and went, bang, I've got to do this for myself.
Yeah, I think for me, when we were opening Mr. Close, we were trying to find, I guess, a coffee that wasn't, you didn't see it everywhere. Mm. And it was a good specialty coffee that for us was going to be consistent. Mm-hmm. And a good robust coffee for city workers. Mm-hmm. We knew that we couldn't really get too fancy with our offerings because most of our customers, 95% of them, are going to work. They want their coffee. They want it good, balanced and consistent.
And a little bit of a jolt.
Yeah. So they're not really too much into the different styles of coffee that are out there. So for me, I think it's the decent coffee is extracted well. The milk is nice and silky. It's a good temperature around the 65 degree mark, and it's poured with love. And that's, I think, the biggest thing.
Without love, it's not coffee.
Yeah.
Ben, probably coming from a different tack. As somebody who buys the green beans, as Craig does as well, and you guys roast them and do all of that, do you have a preference for pour over or a little espresso or siphon coffee?
No, there's no straight out preference. It really just depends on the moment and what you need in that moment. I think there's lots of great different expressions of coffee starting to come out around Melbourne, which is really exciting, as you mentioned, kind of pour over and different brew methods. But you know, if you like a little shot of espresso in the afternoon or something a little bit richer and kind of more full, like a flat white in the morning, that's kind of just depends on your mood.
I have rules that nothing after midday, because I don't sleep otherwise.
Weak.
Yeah, I know I'm weak, but six before midday is good. Craig, what's the perfect cup of coffee for you?
Oh, well, it depends what time of day it is, I suppose, and what you've got on. But the other gentleman in the studio there alluded to it. You know, the whole being obsessed by the beans is great, having fresh product and getting the right milk temperature, but you know, it has to be a bit of customer service there, and that seems to be something we're all starting to struggle a little bit with in Australia, is getting that right customer service behind the jump. And, you know, that just tops the whole experience and makes it fantastic. So that's certainly becoming very important now. I think in Melbourne, we've certainly got, the coffee quality is one of the best places in the world. There's no doubt about that in the specialty coffee scene. But yeah, it's that customer service thing that really has to come in now to make it the ultimate experience.
And James, that's something that your team do particularly well. I have a regular coffee place that Sunday through Friday serves me well, unless I'm in town. Saturdays, there's a joy of coming over to your venue because all of your staff seem to be well-trained and knowledgeable, and none of them look like they've got out of the wrong side of the bed.
Thank you. And there's a lot of effort behind that. Mm. One biggest platforms that we work off is our customer service and our engagement. And you know, we've always said that there are so many things behind that one cup of coffee, from the dairies that provide you the milk, to the growers that you source the beans from, to the people who roast it so lovingly, to the barista, and all the people. By the time that coffee gets onto your into your cup, you want it to be made well, and you want that service to be that extra 5% to make that a great transaction, and that's really, really important to us.
And it does make a difference. Craig, next year Melbourne is hosting an international coffee expo, and part of that is the World Championships for Baristas, who are not legal people. They are, in fact, those people that make our coffee.
Right.
How important is it to Melbourne as a city in our industry that we can host a World Championships? We've not done it before?
No, we haven't done it before. We have had a world champion, which was Paul Bassett in 2003, but we haven't actually ever won the rights to host it before in Australia. I think it's a fantastic opportunity to show the world how good Australia is at specialty coffee. Ben and myself have both judged at world level, as of many other people's. So our competitors have always done really well in the World Barista Championship. We've always had a big pool of judges attending the World Barista Championship and learning. And I think having travelled the world and done a few of these barista competitions, you know, we need to show the world how good we are. And I don't think they really understand that specialty coffee is available on every corner in Melbourne. There aren't many other places in the world where that is available so readily as it is in Melbourne.
I think they should understand that we are the world's most livable city for a variety of reasons, and having good coffee is one of them. Craig, stick with me. I've got to play some messages, and we'll be back to continue this conversation here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. 0427 Joy 949. Send us a message. Where is your favourite coffee? It could be anywhere. 1300 Joy 949. You can ring and tell Heath. You can email on air at joy.org.au, or you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. It is 27 minutes past one.
Joy 94.9.
It's 28 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. We're taking you through an hour of coffee. On the phone is Craig Dixon, the president of the Australasian Specialist Coffee Association. And with me in studio, Ben Bicknell from Five Senses Coffee, and James from Mr. Close, which is my local of a Saturday, and it's very, very close to us here at Joy 94.9. You have, James, a specialist coffee, a single origin coffee, available every sort of couple of days that it changes. What is that? What does it mean?
Well, most cafes will work on their main coffee, which is a blend. And so the blend is sourced, I guess, just like wine. You know, you have a red wine, and the grapes will come from certain areas and regions around Victoria or Australia, and to create the perfect Sauv Blanc. Like with us, we have a Campos coffee, and it's a blend, and they create their supreme blend. So they also give us a single origin, which we change every 2 to 3 days, and the single origin comes from one particular area around the world, whether it be Papua New Guinea, whether it be South America, Ethiopia, wherever it might be. So you're getting a certain flavour from that particular single origin that can depend on just a whole range of different things: altitudes, where it's planted, how it's roasted, and so it really can. Some are great with milk, some are great just as black, and it's great for our customers, because we didn't start with a single. We just started with a supreme blend, and then we thought, well, I wonder if they're going to really like a single, and they're loving it. We actually go through quite a bit each week now.
And I think this does kind of tap back into that question of what is specialty. And I think really one of the distinctions that's starting to come forward for myself is that it's moving from purely a functional beverage to something a bit more culinary, so that it kind of taps back into an enjoyment of the produce and the way that it's prepared, rather than just that caffeine hit or something that's just getting you through.
A text message, Beck from Bavaria. Thank you, Beck. Not to be too sucky, but I get my second coffee fix on a Saturday morning at Mr. Close.
Oh,
she's
Thank
being
you.
Sucky, but thanks, Beck.
Thank you, Beck.
Craig, you might be able to answer this question, and it's going to tie into something that Ben told me while we were listening to those messages. The World Barista Championships, 54 countries represented. How many countries are producing coffee?
Well, I producing coffee, I, as in green coffee.
As in green coffee, the beans.
I probably couldn't tell you that off the top of my head. I would imagine it would. I know we have, you know, over 20 origins in, just in our factory. So, look, I would imagine that, I mean, coffee only grows in the tropics, I suppose. So, between the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn.
Ethiopia grows good coffee. Is that within that region?
Yeah, they certainly do. So that's basically the only area that coffee really grows. So any of the countries in that band basically are producing coffee of some quality.
So a lot of South America?
Yeah, a lot from South America. Yeah, I mean, there's so many countries.
I have to mention something slightly ironic. Several of my colleagues here at Joy have just walked back into the building with big mugs of frothy-looking stuff that come from a very large coffee chain. I'd like to go out and beat them with them, but I shall not.
It wasn't coffee, let's be honest.
No, it wasn't coffee. It's a chilled beverage of some description and has some, you know, squirty cream on the top. So we won't call it coffee. What is it about the tropics that grows good coffee beans?
Look, it's all about the weather and the altitude and those sorts of things. So having a consistent weather pattern so you can grow the product. Obviously, you know, trying to grow it in Victoria wouldn't really work given that we have four seasons in one day down here. It's about the weather and the altitude, basically, so that they can grow the crop effectively. Sometimes we have issues with frost and stuff in Brazil, which is obviously a bit of a problem. So mm-hmm. you don't want too much of those things. So, you know, it's a product that grows on a vine that has to ripen correctly and be picked correctly and be treated correctly. So the tropics is just really the best area for that to all happen for the coffee tree.
Okay, I'm going to throw a challenge to all three of you. I was surprised recently to learn that we are producing incredibly good avocados up on the border of Victoria and New South Wales because of the conditions. Similar conditions, avocados grow very well in tropical heat. There's also some other similarly tropical sort of things growing up in that region. Is it possible, has anybody tried, do we know, to grow coffee this far south?
We certainly have a few plants that that hang around. Generally, we keep them huddled indoors during the colder winter months.
Yeah.
But certainly, from a commercial production point of view, you know, the further south that I know of in Australia is kind of northern New South Wales that coffee is being grown.
Byron Bay.
Yep, Byron Bay.
That was going to be my next question. Are we growing quality coffee here in Australia? He's looking at me strangely with the word quality. Are we growing coffee here in Australia?
Yes.
Yes. So Byron Bay, anywhere else?
Up in Queensland, yeah, on the Atherton Tablelands up near Cairns, there's a fair amount of the coffee production is being grown up there.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously starting to get to the altitude and similar kind of growing conditions as between the tropics. So, yeah, there's a little bit of coffee production coming out of Australia. And certainly,
why did you look so quizzically when I said quality?
Well, I think, you know, one of the interesting things about coffee is that it is, as Craig mentioned, it kind of grows on a kind of tree in bunches, in clusters of cherries. So the beans, the term bean is actually a bit of a misnomer. Mm. They're actually seeds of a cherry. And obviously they ripen at different stages. So one of the key aspects of good quality coffee is picking and getting a ripe selection. And you can do that in a number of different ways. But in Australia, obviously, labour costs and so on are quite different to many other countries around the world. And hand-picking or really selectively picking ripe cherries one by one is pretty impossible or financially impossible in Australia.
Is that why some of the poorer nations in the world are providing us with a fair trade coffee? Brazil is one of the it has a very high population of people who would be considered poor. Likewise, Ethiopia and Papua New Guinea as three examples.
Fair trade's probably a whole other discussion that I don't know if we should enter into it or not, really, but it's a bit different to specialty grade coffee, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, the way that we approach it at Five Senses is that for the whole chain to be sustainable, from the farmer through the roaster and through to cafe owners and through to the consumer, you know, everyone needs to be making money and being paid a wage and have a sustainable living conditions. And the great sustainability that we focus on is quality. You know, if the coffee tastes good, people are going to come back and buy another cup of it. You know, cafes can sell more, roasters can sell more, and the farmers have got a secure kind of chain of sale all the way through. So, you know, if they have a great living condition in producing countries and can keep producing better and better coffees, that's kind of where it all works and comes together.
James, yeah, I think that the important... I think the important thing to understand in there is that people like Five Senses and Veneziano and Campos and a few of those larger specialty coffee roasters in Australia, we would be paying our growers that most of us deal with directly, like one-on-one. We actually talk to the growers, you know, on a regular basis and visit them, and we would be paying them a lot more money per kilo than what maybe some of the multinationals are paying the fair trade people. So the specialty world, from our point of view, is probably beyond fair trade coffee. You know, we're one-on-one with the grower. We're making sure that their farmers, their local schools and all their people are very well looked after. And we understand that we pay a premium for that, but that's okay. I suppose fair trade's really set up to protect the growers that maybe don't have the quality that our guys have from the likes, you know, from the, let's just call them, the large multinationals around the world. And it protects them from being bullied by those. But as far as we're concerned in specialty coffee, we sit probably beyond the fair trade prices. And it's a different world.
James, as an end user, how important are those conditions and are those conversations that these guys are having direct with growers? How important are they in the decisions you make about what you use?
Very important. And that was the main reason why we chose Campos, which is along the same lines as Veneziano and Five Senses. Direct trade. You know, they go to the farms, they know the farmers, they pay a higher price for their coffee, they know where it's coming from. And I think coffee, as well as cocoa, you know, there's ethics to it. And I think it goes down to even why I provide wooden forks and knives and biodegradable takeaway containers. That's just really important to me as a cafe owner. It costs me more. Mm. It means my margins are even smaller. But I just want to sleep a little bit better at night, and I just want to do things right. So I think coffee out there it's a massive trade. You know, and it really is for a lot of countries, and there's a lot of abuse out there. Mm. And these great companies that we're talking about today are doing the right thing, and I think it's important for cafes to do the same thing.
Craig Dixon, when is the Melbourne International Coffee Expo?
I knew you were going to ask me that today, and I don't have the date on me, so I hope Ben does, but I know it's very early.
It's May.
Early May, yep.
And that's when the International Barista World Champions Barista Competition. Ben's going to explain what that competition entails once we let you get back to lunch, Craig. Thanks, mate, for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Good to talk to you. That's okay. Craig Dixon. He's the president of the Australasian Specialist Coffee Association. A couple of messages. Thank you, Matthew, for telling us you're not drinking a chilled coffee beverage, but indeed a chilled chocolate beverage, good for you. And Anna says she's sitting in one of her favourite coffee places, Padres in Brunswick East Project, listening to Cravings about coffee. Lovely. Thank you, Anna. How much competition is there between roasters like Campos and Veneziano and Five Senses and Seven Seeds? How much competition is there?
There's a bit of friendly competition out there for sure. But I think that... you know, there's a large number of cafes around Melbourne. We're obviously all very aware of that. And you know, the great thing is that everyone's kind of trying to do slightly different things and express their coffee in different ways. So I guess just like with some great wine producers around the country, you know, obviously there's a certain level of competition out there. But at the end of the day, there's many people like you, Pete, who are out looking for lots of different cups of coffee. So it's
I do get around Melbourne quite a bit, and you know, I've got some favourite haunts, and I'll actually drive. I'll go out of my way to stop and get a coffee that I know is going to provide me with a coffee that comes from a sustainable process of being here, and also that the people behind the machine know what they're doing. And far too frequently, I think, in a lot of, and please don't start texting me and telling me this is the wrong term, but a lot of mum and dad operations that sort of, you know, let's open a cafe because dad's got a redundancy or mum's got a redundancy, where they think they know about coffee but generally tend to cock it up rather monumentally. Coffee's burned or over-extracted. Milk is at the point that it's like molten lava and burns the inside of your mouth. None of those things should happen.
Yeah, well, it's certainly, and it comes back to this, again, that representation of the whole chain and it being something more than just a functional hit of caffeine, mm-hmm. is that, you know, there's a lot of care that needs to be taken to represent this coffee. And there's you know, a fair bit of responsibility there, I think, from a barista's point of view and from a cafe owner's point of view to represent this product that has, you know, generally touched like 40 hands all the way along the chain. And, you know, for us is a everyday, maybe nice little treat. And for people at the other end of the world in the producing countries is their livelihood. Mm. And, you know, the fact that they've gone through and crafted this amazing produce and grown it, we doesn't want to kind of retrospect.
Doesn't give people the opportunity to bastardise it, not at all.
Exactly.
I'd still like to hear from you, 0427JOY949. Tell me where your favourite coffee is, 1300JOY949. You can ring Heath and speak to him. You can email onair@joy.org.au or you can send a tweet to cravings_JOY949. We're going to have a couple of messages and be back with a bit of music and to finish our discussion on coffee and answer some of those rather difficult questions that do exist about coffee. It's 18 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
The very gorgeous Sarah Blasco with Hey Ya. It's from the Leica version, Volume 7, as was our earlier track, which was Eskimo Joe's cover of somebody that I used to know from Got Here. I like playing these. We've got a couple of messages. Andy in Reservoir, thank you. I think that's Reservoir, not Reservoir. Thank you for your message. De Graves Espresso in De Graves Street is my favourite coffee in Melbourne. Thank you. And from Donna Frock. The best coffee in Melbourne is at Truffula Seed at 1 Spring Street in the city. The beans have not been dried on the breasts of Bolivian virgins. Now that's got to be fair trade. Thank you, Donna. That's where Donna likes to get her coffee. I'd like to hear where you'd like to get yours every morning. Where's your jolt coming from? 0427JOY949 is the SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can pick up the phone, ring Heath, tell him where you get your coffee, 1300JOY949, or you can send a tweet to cravings_JOY949 if you're a Twittering type of person. James, if there was an event at some point that was how not to drink coffee like a wanker, as there is for wine, would you attend?
I think so. I think I'd. I've learned a lot about coffee. To me, coffee. I'm a pure consumer, and now mm-hmm. I own a cafe. I've learned a lot about coffee, and I think the biggest thing I've learned is that people are entitled to have coffee any way they like it,
unless it's a decaf coffee with skim soy milk. If your coffee choice is decaf with skim soy milk, do not let me know and go and have yourself a glass of water, because neither of those things are going to do you any good.
No, but I mean, you do get so many. I mean, I always laugh when I will go up to a table of 12 and every single coffee order will be different from the other.
What was that movie where it was...
with Steve Martin.
Yeah, somebody was having a half-calf, double-decaf frappuccino with a slice of lemon or something. Yes. Does it frustrate you that I have to ask that question, Ben? Because it seems as there is with wine, there are a lot of descriptives that some might refer to as a little bit wanky. You know, there's things like the forest floor characteristics in wine that I just find extraordinary, or, you know, something that smells like the arse end of a goat in the wine. If the wine smells like that, I'm not drinking it.
Sure.
Is there a similar thing with coffee? You know, is there a tasting wheel? Is there something that tells you what it should smell like?
Yeah, there are. Certainly on the on kind of the green coffee buying end of the scale, mm-hmm. And in terms of the selection and process, there are a lot of those kind of international languages that are trying to be established. And, you know, a lot of it can come across as you say, wanky. And I think it's a healthy thing to be wary of within the hospitality industry in general. And as we obviously saw with wine for quite a while, that kind of barrier to actually just enjoying the experience and enjoying the beverage was one of the most painful things kind of out there. So I think
I have a vision in my head of folks standing around in black roll neck sweaters and sports coats, you know, swirling their cup of coffee and sniffing and pulling out some of these things. I mean, that's what happened in the 80s.
Skinny jeans, tats and big beards.
love it. What about some of these alternative brews? We have heard you know, there are different methods. We talked about siphoning and, you know, pour overs and what the devil does cupping mean with regard to coffee.
Yeah.
Talk us through these alternative processes. Some of them have come from places like Japan.
Yeah, definitely. There's kind of influences from many parts around the world. And, you know, it's kind of been interesting over the past couple of years as they've started cropping up around Australia, because Australia predominantly has always been 100% espresso-based coffee culture, which is really unique. Like, if you go to the US or Europe, it's generally only about 40% of their...
America, they brew that nasty stuff.
Exactly. They're doing a lot of brewed coffee.
Like dishwater.
Big drip kind of bulk batch brews. But normally only 40% of their market has been espresso. And so it's quite a new thing for us. And rather, I guess, than coming in, you know, as the regular cheap kind of, you know, roadside coffee kind of option, alternative brew methods are coming in at the top end of the scale, where they're being prepared, you know, to order individually. And you can basically select from a range of coffees generally that are on offer. Like a cafe who's offering things might have one or two coffees.
Mm-hmm.
So alternative brew methods covers, you know, obviously a whole range of different preparation methods. The one that we all know and probably had in grandma's cupboard was the plunger, the French press. Yes. So that's a filter coffee, a brew coffee.
And that's bearable.
Well, yes, we've generally all got some pretty bad memories of that.
Of them exploding.
Yeah, yes. Or sludge in the bottom of your cup as you finished it off and so on. But these days, I guess the people that are starting to offer it, you're looking to make sure that the roast profile is correct for your brew method.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a different roast style for espresso than for brewed coffee, that you're grinding it fresh. And that you're preparing it well. You know, most people are like, oh yeah, we'll chuck in a scoop or a little bit more in there. And yeah, it was an espresso roast, pre-ground, stored in the fridge. A big no-no.
You don't put coffee in the fridge?
No, oh, not in the fridge at all.
James, do you use any of these alternative methods apart from your gorgeous big espresso machine that you have?
We do. We invested in a cold drip last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about to bring it out this week because we just haven't had the demand. But so instead of extracting it, from heat, it sits in a big big contraption, really, and it sits on high. Cold water then filters all the way through this sort of laboratory looking device, and then drips onto the coffee, and then drips into a big sort of beaker underneath.
Is that heated anyway on that process, or is it served cold?
No, it's all cold. So then we store it in the fridge, and then we pour that over ice.
It's really tasty.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because cold coffee is almost, for some people, really far too scary to contemplate.
Yeah, and often that's fair enough, because espresso coffee that's prepared cold or is served cold can often kind of get shocked, and you get a lot of bitterness and some unpleasant characters coming out of it. But because this whole brew method is just using cold water, it's a very slow brew method.
Mm-hmm.
So it drips through, can take up to around 6 hours to prepare the batch.
Is that cost effective?
No, look, it's a conversation piece. And you know, that isn't it funny? The reason I got it was because I wanted to be taken a little bit more seriously for our coffee. So
right.
When we put it up last summer, people looking up into Mr. Close, not knowing who we were.
From Swanston Street.
Yeah, oh, gee, they must know a little bit about a coffee. They've got a cold drip. Well, what is that? And so, you know, for us and for me, it looks great. And I actually really like the product. It's a beautiful, smooth black coffee. It's fantastic.
That should get me through my summer Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
we have another message from Douglas. Thank you, Douglas. I recently moved to Melbourne from Europe, have been in London and Munich for the last decade, lucky you, and have been very pleasantly surprised how bloody good coffee is in the lanes of Melbourne. My favourite for the moment is the superb Fugazza on Equitable Place. I don't even know where Equitable Place is. Love it so much. I also buy their Four Rascals beans from my home machine, drinking it now as I type. Doug, thank you. And it's interesting how we all have different tastes, and that there are different characteristics that we demand in a coffee that, you know, the person next to us may not. We're going to have a couple messages and be back to wrap this baby up, because it's almost time for me to go and have another coffee. It's 2:06 here on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Ethel Chop here. You're listening to Joy 94.9, idiot.
Yes, you are listening to Joy 94.9, 2:05. And whilst we have these lovely gentlemen in here talking about coffee, there are, like, you mentioned Pinot Noir before, and there are certain characteristics that you would look for across all Pinots, whether it's light, medium, full-bodied. it's the same with coffee. When we drink a coffee, and whether it's a long black or whether it's a coffee that's got milk, what are some of those taste characteristics that will tell us it's good coffee?
Wow, that's a hard question. It's a range.
How long is a piece of string?
It's a tricky one there. Look, I mean, I think, you know, it's a good coffee when you enjoy drinking it. That's a bit of a cop-out, that one.
That's a lovely fence-sitting answer.
You certainly shouldn't be having any unpleasant characteristics that you need to add sugar with.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find that you can't drink the coffee without sugar because it's really bitter or an unpleasant aftertaste, then that's probably a good signal that it's not great coffee. But otherwise...
Can that be because it's been over-extracted?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. There's a whole range of areas where coffee can go wrong as well. So that's why, even though...
It's a delicate little thing, isn't it?
It is, it is. Mm-hmm. You've got to treat it with love.
I mentioned orange during those announcements, and you looked at me like I had two heads. Some of the reviews I've read for coffee, and indeed some I've done, there can be a citrus characteristic to coffee, surely.
Yeah, yeah. Look, there's a lot of great flavours out there with coffee, and I think that's one of the exciting things that's becoming apparent with single-origin coffees being featured and other brew methods, is that you can really start to pick out the flavours from that particular growing region and that particular process.
Mm.
And that's kind of the really exciting thing for, again, expanding this into that culinary world. You know, that a coffee from Ethiopia in Sidama is going to taste very different to a coffee from Huila in Colombia, you know, because of that terroir. So it's similar kind of situations, as I think Craig mentioned before, the soil and the altitude and rain.
So, sunshine, the sun affect?
Yep, definitely.
Affect coffee like grapes?
And then how it's also processed. So there's a level of fermentation that happens, and just like a winemaker kind of controlling that process and trying to showcase different characters.
And I'd highly recommend, if anyone wants to know more about coffee, is to attend a cupping session. And most, I'm sure you guys would do a cupping session. And I found it amazing. I learned so much about coffee because they take you through, I think we had about 8 different coffees from different regions.
You get a little bit buzzy by the end of that. I did one of those sessions just in the top end of Carlton here. I can't remember the outlet.
7 seats?
It might have been 7 seats. Today they're just in that little funny street that starts with B. Bouverie, something.
Berkeley,
that's the one. I did a cupping session there. By the time I left, I was completely buzzed in the sort
You did spit late it out, after. Didn't you? You didn't
for the most
part, drinking it.
But it's like wine. If it tastes that good, why should I spit it
exactly.
out?
Exactly.
I only spit it out when things are nasty. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in. James, a website?
Mr. Close, M-I-S-T-E-R, mrclose.com.au. Thank you for having
me. Lovely. And we do encourage you to go and see if they're preparing the type of brew that you like. Ben, your website?
5senses.com.au.
The number 5senses.com.au. Guys, thank you for coming in. It's been an interesting chat and something that I'm glad we've had the opportunity to do.
No worries.
Thank you.
And now we'll think about running off and getting some coffee. The boys from Fender Bender are about to jump into this studio. First, they will have a little track. It's not as camp as usual. This one's from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. They'll take you through until 2 o'clock, till 3 o'clock. Hannah will be with you for Little Fish thereafter. And stick with us on Joy for a myriad of entertainment that takes you right through until it's time for you to shut your weary eyes and go nine eyes. Until next week, I'm Pete Dillon. This has been Cravings. Enjoy your week.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.